This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Hey Daniel, do you know anyone who's published a book?
Well, of course I know him. He's me.
Hi everyone, you're listening to Thoughts and Theories on ORFM, where I'll delve deeper into the meanings and messages of films, books, TV shows, and more. I'm Asha Amma Asri, and let's get into it. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Thoughts and Theories, and welcome back, Daniel.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good to be back. I'm feeling great.
Yeah, no, actually, we've heard your voice before somewhere. Have you come on to the show before, actually?
Oh, yes, I have. although that was for something stage-related rather than page-related.
Adeline's Cottage. How did that go? You've just wrapped the season.
That was absolutely fantastic. I think it was even better the second time around as opposed to last year. I think we really gave it our all this time.
Fantastic.
Same venue, same show, same everything, but I think really this time, I think we really locked in this time around. I think
I quite agree. Like I saw it both times during your first like workshopping time in Lunchtime Theatre and then you guys performing it for Fringe. And like it's like you say, it's the same play, but the emotions was like so much more fleshed out, I think, and the characters were like, I think, so much more believable. Not to say that they weren't believable before,
yeah,
but this is like, I think, another level that I didn't realize could be achieved. So that was fantastic.
Yes, I think there was really something that I understand exactly what you say, that at some point in the middle of the rehearsals, I think when we were about in the middle of Tech Week, when the wonderful Caitlin and the wonderful Robert were going over some of their stuff, I think they really, all of us, tapped in to something way deeper, which I think is really the heart that you're actually trying to dig to. And I think we actually scratched that and tapped into it.
That is awesome.
Like,
it shows.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well done. Do you feel like post-show blues or anything like that?
I mean, having done dozens and dozens of shows, I think it's something that I'm very accustomed to now, but it's not, I don't so much feel the blues, but just more of a really lovely, like, contentedness of like, hell yeah, we did it.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Mm. Well, actually, fun fact, guys, for those of you who don't know, Daniel isn't just a talent on the stage, but he's actually got some other things that are coming out, which is why he's back here today.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear you've published a book, not just a book, but you're like doing a trilogy or a series?
A series.
Ooh.
Yeah. Full-blown series.
My goodness. That's so exciting.
Yep.
That's like, so you've already like, have you released everything in the series already or you just started like...
Right now, this is just the first book that has come out,
mm-hmm.
It's been self-published through the people at the Copy Press up in Nelson, and due to the size of the book itself, to help ease the costs, we had to split it into two volumes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, for all intents and purposes, it is one book. It's just been split into two.
So it's like part one.
Yeah, it's like
two,
like a volume one, volume two.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what's the book called first?
The series itself is called The Starlight Symphony, but this first entry is called The Kindling.
Kindling.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me what it's about. Sounds like fantasy.
Yes, very much. Very epic high fantasy. Very textbook high fantasy, absolutely. This first one in particular is definitely more of a coming-of-age story, or the really fancy term is a Bildungsroman. So this first entry, this first story, is about a brother and sister, or stepbrother and stepsister, and who have been living alone in their own little home in a little village tucked away from the rest of the world. And in this world called Astralheim, magic is very, very ubiquitous in this world. It's something that people can naturally pick up and use.
It's like a lot more common.
Yeah, it's very very frequent. And it's sort of like a muscle that needs to be exercised. Anyone can pick it up and mm-hmm. use it, but it's the people who really make it part of their focus that can become very proficient with it. And so at a certain point in people's lives, they have what's known as the kindling, where they tap into their magic for the first time or access it when they previously couldn't before. So it's very analogous to like...
Whoa, analogous. Sorry, I'm not that smart. What does that mean?
Analogous, like similar to. Like it's very symbolic of like puberty or like shifting through adolescence into adulthood, because on average, the average age in which somebody has their kindling is usually about like 12 to around 16 or 17. And at this point in the story, our lead, Marcus, he's about 19 or 20 at the start of the series, and he hasn't had his kindling yet.
Oh, a late bloomer.
Yeah, and he's like, what's going on here? Something's wrong. And so he's very, very ambitious, and he wants to become a sorcerer like his late stepfather. So he mm-hmm. wants to go to this amazing magical academy on the next country over, and he wants to train there and become what's known as a Valkyrie, who are sort of magical field agents that go out into the world and, you know, do missions and go on quests and dangerous adventures, all of that good stuff.
That sounds legit. I'd want to be a Valkyrie.
Yeah. And it's definitely in the history of this world, those modern Valkyries are named after like more ancient Valkyries of like ancient history. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like an homage to that.
Nice.
So, yeah, Marcus wants to become a Valkyrie like his stepfather, but his stepsister, Teresa, who's very quiet, very shy, very reserved, she's very, very, very like overly protective of Marcus because they're pretty much the only family that they've got is each other.
Wait, who's older between the two?
Teresa is the older sibling by like a solid year or two. And yeah, so they're kind of just barely getting by in their day-to-day lives. That's kind of their status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're going through their trials and tribulations, they bump into our third lead, Ronan, who is sort of a mercenary criminal on the run. And he's just come out of definitely what was considered to be the heist of the century, because he was part of this very powerful crime syndicate. But he's just come out of the aftermath or fallout of a heist that has gone horrifically wrong.
Oh, no.
Very, very wrong. And he's one of very few that came out of it alive.
Oh, so dramatic. Stakes are high.
Stakes are very, very high. And pretty much all eyes are on him right now. And then he bumps into these two siblings. And now the three of them are sort of caught up in each other's problems. And then they have to work together to try and stop this disaster or cataclysm that's sort of threatening the land right now and is seeking to kind of tear it apart pretty much.
Damn, bro. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So we have Marcus, Teresa, and Ronan.
Yes.
And they're like some... It seems like they've got a lot to fight for.
Yeah, they got a lot on their plates.
Oh, my God. And so Ronan's like, did you say like 20-ish years old? Oh, no, not Ronan, Marcus.
Marcus.
And Teresa's older. How old is Ronan? Is he the oldest of the bunch since he's like a well-known heist?
Yeah, I have my cast of 8 main leads mm-hmm. throughout the course of the series. And Ronan, yeah, Ronan's about the oldest of the bunch. At the start, he's probably like 24-ish. I'm very loosey-goosey with ages, but yeah, he's the oldest out of the 8, as mm-hmm. I like mm-hmm. to call them. So he wasn't dealt the best hand in terms of like the backstory of this character. He's definitely the
someone had to draw the short straw, you know.
Yeah, he's sort of the dark horse, where he sort of had a difficult upbringing worked a little bit as a pirate, was definitely familiar with the whole criminal underworld.
Right.
So his sort of arc is thinking that he's sort of past the point of hope or saving or being a decent person. Mm-hmm. But his major arc is like turning into the light and becoming a better person for it.
Dang. You know, automatically, just from like hearing those descriptions and stuff, I feel like Ronan's going to be the fan favorite.
I kind of suspect that as well. I think across those eight main leads, yeah, I think Ronan is definitely, just for the direction that I have for him as a character, I totally agree that he's going to be well favored.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of like favors for him, like being, you know, the dark horse, you know, being like someone who's like really jaded. But I think what sells it to me personally is him used to being like a pirate.
Yeah, he's sort of very like ex-pirate. And then he also got wrapped up into this more serious, darker sort of assassin group. But that's sort of where he realized he was in too deep, and so he bailed out of that. So that's another part of his history that's going to be tapped into.
I see. Yeah, I see.
A lot of baggage.
Damn. No, you know, we love characters with baggage, though, because that means we get to be there on the journey for when they like unload that baggage.
We like,
you know,
the bad boys.
Yeah, no, exactly. You still right through me.
Yeah.
Dang it, I was trying to, like, be cool and sophisticated. I feel like that's going to be a fan favorite. No, he's already my favorite character.
Yeah.
So, you are studying at the moment, mm-hmm. and then you were like, you know what? Let me publish a book real quick while I'm studying. That's crazy. Like, tell me what made you, like, you know, take that final plunge. Like, I'm gonna, you know, actually publish this book. Because I assume you've been working on this for a while.
Yeah, I definitely been working on it, like, well before I dove into uni. So it's a very big passion project that I've had for a good many years now. But it was probably about 2 or 3 years ago where I started taking serious steps to actually get it published. Like writing it and planning it out is proving to be a faster and faster process for me. But the main struggle was actually getting it published, because that took up the majority of the problem. And I was also working at the time, and like it was, you know, the last like 2024 and most of 2025 were like fairly rough for me on all sorts of levels.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was just... Yeah, a lot of, like, life stuff and mental health stuff, of course, which obviously I won't dive into too much. But, like, I'm, like, way on the other end of that, where, like, a lot of things that I've been working on are, like, properly falling into place now, where, like, my ability to actually now self-publish this is now finally here.
That's
and it's paying off.
I'm really happy.
Yeah.
Like, like, this is very exciting stuff. Like, obviously, it sounds like you've had, like, a pretty rough patch, you know, and I am sorry that, you know, you had to go through that.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound really, like, cheesy or something, but it sounds like you came out on the other end, like, stronger and better than ever.
Yes.
You know? Like, you answered that so quickly.
Yeah, but that's
I mean,
honestly...
you got the book published. Like, that's crazy.
That's honestly the kind of thing, that's the kind of stuff that I also, that kind of part of the human experience that I love as well, which is exactly what I kind of want to reflect in my writing as well, where sometimes, like, I'm a very, you know, even at my very worst days, I'm very a very optimistic, positive kind of person. And that's definitely the type of thing that you'll see reflected in this series, hopefully, mm-hmm. that, like, sometimes it's, you know, going through that dark period and coming out the other side and being stronger as a result of it, I think is like a really crucial thing.
Right.
So just being able to bounce back or learn from the experience, I think it just makes you better. It makes you stronger.
100%. Yeah. Well, no, I really like that, you know, like that viewpoint. Mm. Though I do have to say, I'm a little bit surprised that, okay, I'm not surprised that you're an optimistic person. Like, you very much give me that vibe. But when you say that, like, it's sort of reflected in your writing, because I found that, like, many artists that I know are the opposite of what they're, like, their art is the opposite of what they are like.
Mm.
Like, for example, like, the creator of, like, a lot of, like, the the Ghibli films, right? Like the Ghibli films are all so like positive,
Miyazaki.
Full of life. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I didn't want to try to pronounce the name.
Yeah.
And then, but like when you hear him talk, he's like so sad.
Yes, I actually know. Yeah, Hayao Miyazaki himself. I am very familiar with that. That his sort of the juxtaposition between the art and the artist. Yeah, he's always been quite a cynical sort of person. I mean, I think for him, I can understand his sort of angle because I think he was that generation of people of Japan that was very post-war.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw a lot of sort of the effects of how like war affected his country and his people. And you'll see it in a lot of his work as well. He's not only very anti-war, but he's also very environmentalist.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, especially in films like Nausicaa or in Princess Mononoke. I think you see that so very strongly that that's reflective of his worldview.
Yeah, and it's quite beautiful.
Mm.
But speaking of like worldview, I'm glad you brought in your optimism into your story because I think as well with like how reality is like sort of shaping right now. I think it's very important to have, corners of the internet or like stories told out there that actually has like a moral message behind it or something good, something hopeful to look forward to.
Yes, I agree with that too. And I've noticed that trend sometimes where our escapism tends to be the opposite of what's going on in our reality. You know, if we're in a time of prosperity or the world is looking at least somewhat decent, our escapism turns to something that's maybe more grimdark or suddenly something that subverts expectations like Game of Thrones.
Right.
All of a sudden that's very appealing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if the world is starting to look a little bit more dire, our escapism is the opposite of that.
Yep.
And I think that's really, really what I wanted to tap into as well, that during those times of hardship, that it's crucial that we escape with stories that showcase good virtues and traits of, you know, hope and truth, justice, all of that really
right.
cheesy but noble, bright kind of stuff.
Okay. So, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I have a question. Out of the eight that you've written, who would you say is like the most moral character, or like I don't know the more I would I don't know if law abiding counts with the same as moral, because I know like, that's also like a debate, but
like lawful good, like
yeah,
the D&D
yeah.
alignment,
yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say. Well, actually,
definitely not Ronan.
Probably not Ronan.
I just have a hunch.
At the start, he's probably more chaotic neutral more than anything. But to quickly name off all of our eight, we have Marcus, Teresa, Braxton, who's sort of a knight in training. Then we have Amber, who is from the lands of Kaitahua to the south. I think you'd really like Amber. She's very sweet and bubbly and energetic.
Yay!
And there's Juniper, who's the very sassy, like charming espionage bisexual girl. and then you've got Kentaro, who's our sort of disavowed samurai. So it's like, and then Marcus, Teresa, Ronan, Braxton, Amber, Juniper, Kentaro, then Maria, our princess, who is the princess of Kaitahua and is next Ooh. In line to become queen, and she's actually the main focus of the second book.
Interesting.
And then we have... Anyway, I think Maria, to answer the question, Maria would probably be within closest to lawful good as possible because she's definitely...
she's a princess as well.
Yeah, she's sort of been accustomed to being, like, familiar with, like, politics mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. way that laws and customs work. She wasn't initially first in line. For a very long time, she was the second oldest out of eight kids.
Mm-hmm.
And by the start of the second book, the oldest child, the son, is unfortunately deceased, and all of the weight and expectation.
Wait, does this count as a spoiler?
I mean, it's sort of the status quo by the time the second story happens.
Right, it's not.
It's a little detached from the first book.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all of that weight and responsibility is pretty much shunted straight on her.
That's crazy. And since she wasn't, I mean, I'm assuming since she's known for her whole life that she wasn't going to be, you know, next in line, she wasn't really training to be that. So to have all that expectation suddenly be like that onto her, it's suffocating.
And also a very distant father who is not quite ready to accept that she's next in line because he's still grieving of the loss of his son.
Yeah.
So that creates sort of a divide between the two of them as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I really, like, I'm personally really weak for, like, royal characters because they always have the most, like, complex stories, right? It's the line is always like, do I choose the crown or do I choose the people who I love, right? And these royal characters could either be the most, like, kind, caring people who actually want to take care of, like, the kingdom or wherever they're ruling.
Yeah.
Or they're the most corrupt, evil losers.
There's no in between.
Yeah, like, there's no line like, oh, yeah, I'm just here. I'm just Bob.
In the third book, I have a king who's just a full-blown, like, tyrant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I love that, though.
Yeah.
Makes for a good story.
Very.
I'd say, like, I don't know, Maria. Was it Marie or Maria?
Maria.
Maria is such a, I think, very princess name. I think you said that very well.
And she and Marcus are the primary love interests of one another.
Okay. Exciting. All right. I wanted to ask real quick about the magic in your world, right?
Mm.
So you said it's like a muscle, and if you train it enough, like, anyone could get it, right?
Yeah.
So if anyone could get it, what is it? Without spoiling, what is it about Marcus that's like? Is it like genuinely that does he think there's something wrong with him? Is he considered like, I don't know, like disabled in the context of this universe?
I think through the whole. Certainly not disabled, though that is actually a really interesting discussion to bring forward. But for the majority of the first book, he has
yeah, I feel like I've like
not to step into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
It's basically for the majority of the first book, it is a very big question mark as to why he hasn't his yet. But there is also like an additional secret to Marcus that only he and Teresa know about is kept under wraps and is sort of revealed later.
Right.
So
that is a central question of the first book that Marcus needs to, I guess, unveil, which, you know, that sounds interesting. I'm very excited. So the type of magic that people do, like, is it, I don't know, because I know different, like, you know, fantasy books have different, like, magical systems, right? Mm. Is this, like, the common magic that people would get, is it like elemental or is it like more like, oh, like little charms to help clean the house?
Yeah.
Or are you like assigned like a spirit animal? Like, I have no idea.
It branches off into a wide variety of like different angles and schools for different purposes.
Right.
So like a lot of what you were mentioning there, those are all like separate divisions.
Interesting.
Like people can have familiars as pets, like Braxton, he has a falcon as his familiar.
Sick.
But yeah, there's that avenue where people can harness the elements and use those, or their magic can have certain utilities, or you can have it affect certain items. In fact, I even have a little notebook here of like any ideas that I have that actually divide magic into all of its like separate schools, having like different functions and everything. But yeah, it's definitely it's the rabbit hole goes pretty deep in other words. But yeah,
I've asked another big question, I apologize.
No, absolutely. No, it dives into a lot of different areas, but for each individual person specifically, they sort of develop what's sort of known as affinities, or they start developing specific types of magic that they themselves are particularly good with. It's kind of like their fingerprint. Like Ronan, he sort of realizes that he has an affinity for earth-based magic, like manipulating earth, you know, very classic earthbender type of stuff.
Can I just say, like, earth magic is so goated.
Yes.
Like, it's so OP.
Yep.
Like, it's so cool. There, I love it so much.
There is actually, I got really creative with this. There's actually a scene in the middle of Ronan pulling off this heist where he's trying to use this tool to try and carve into, like, a glass window, like one of those, like, glass breakers, like carving out a hole moving through. But the tool, like, breaks halfway through.
Oh, no.
And then he's like, okay, crap, what do I do? But he knows that he's been working a little bit with earth magic, and then he realizes, wait, glass is sand.
Right.
And sand is rocks. Rocks is earth. So maybe I can actually – and he tries giving it a go, and he feels, like, a couple of vibrations in the glass, and he, like, manages to, like, gently – break it and achieve relatively the same result as well. So
that's some high-level stuff.
Yeah, he's very improvisational, very Indiana Jones in terms of making it up as he goes.
I really like Ronan, I have to say that. And I now hate Braxton specifically because he has a familiar and I want that familiar. How dare you have what I want?
How dare you? Give it to me.
Exactly. Literally. Oh, that's so funny, bro. Okay, we're going to have a wee short break. And you have chosen Adventure of a Lifetime by Coldplay. Why have you chosen that for us today?
Because on bad days or even good days, it's definitely one of the songs that always lifts up my mood. And I think in some ways also captures. It's something that I also listen to that inspires me when I write.
So, oh, awesome. Yeah, all right, guys. We'll see you guys in a wee minute.
Magical. everything was a dream away. Under this pressure, under this weight, we had diamonds taking shape. We had diamonds taking shape.
Welcome back. I hope you guys liked that song. I hope you felt inspired. I actually had this question that I've been wanting to ask since you came on. But out of, and again, it's another character question. Out of the eight, who was your favorite character to write about?
Ooh.
Like, was there a story that you found particularly compelling? Or maybe like a character that you found that was like really difficult to write about?
I think... Fantastic question.
I know. People call me fantastic. Sorry.
Good. They're correct. I think, yeah, the much of the rest of the eight are still being, you know, they're still halfway cut out of the marble.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus is very straightforward to write. And Ronan, of course, is very fun in terms of working on a backstory because that sort of forms the crux of his whole character and his arc. But I think so far, writing Maria has probably been the most... I think what's also... What's been the interesting thing about the second book when I was writing it was the challenges, the fun challenges that I gave myself, in the sense that the second book, a lot of its leads are female, and one of those leads, Amber, she is from Kaitahua, which is a country and a people that are very heavily influenced or inspired by Maori or Polynesian cultures.
Nice.
So Amber herself is the equivalent of that. And so it's me writing from the perspective of a bunch of demographics that I myself do not belong to.
Right.
So that was the challenge that I really, really enjoyed because it helps me... take on different perspectives or learn, but it's a really good practice in empathy or being empathetic towards everybody or taking on different perspectives. Because when you're trying to write different people, you need to really get into their minds. So I think when I first started out writing Maria and her story, she was very, very fun to write because she, at the start of her story, there's sort of like two sides to her where she needs to put on a good image as a princess, but behind closed doors she's very relaxed. Oh my god, like she finally has an opportunity to just be a girl for a little bit. And there's even like a little bit of like underlying sass to her as well. There's like a little bit
of a sassy queen.
There's a bit of fight in her. And she sort of has this, she sort of has the same flaw of like coincidentally, the character Maria from The Sound of Music, where she's not quite afraid to... What was it that Maria from The Sound of Music says? She's like, I just feel this overwhelming desire to just... When this thought is in my head, I just feel the need to say it and get it out all the time. And then her mother, Nun, she just says, some people would call that honesty. And I think my Maria has that same thing as well, where she's sort of pulled back and forth by this need to be the princess or the queen that her people needs, but is also torn between her personal life of sometimes just wanting to be a person.
Right.
So writing that has been really fun and been like a really good challenge for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, that duality sounds like it's a really good thing to play off of.
Yeah, very much.
Good strong contrast.
Yeah.
I love it when, like, there's, because when a character has a good enough, like, internal conflict, that really does drive the rest of the story. Like, the external conflict is, like, I was almost going to say, like, you almost don't need it. But, it is good to have external conflict, of course. But, like, for me personally, like, when there's a good enough emotional conflict, like, it really, like, internal conflict, it really, like, that can drive something forward for me, you know? So I really look forward to reading that. I'm not going to lie.
I think that is absolutely the crucial thing, which is sort of a sort of device that I had learned from other writers, like on YouTube or whatever, talking about their process, is that just about every character has some capacity of, and I use the word very loosely, we could use another one to replace it, but like a quote unquote trauma that they carry with them. And sometimes the arc in the story involves them addressing or unpacking or at least fixing or remedying that trauma or the unlearning of it as well. But I think that's definitely the case where something internal needs to be going on within the character. 'Cause as you say, it doesn't make too much of a difference what's going on outside in terms of the actual plot itself. But it's usually... Really, the entire point of telling a story like that is noticing how the character themselves change. Because you can technically still write static characters that remain relatively the same and have it work in a few rare circumstances. But it's usually your goal is for any particular character to be a different person going in than they did going out. That's really the whole crux of it. And ironically enough, as much as I do really enjoy drawing, I draw as well.
Bro's just like stealing all the talent in the country at this point. Bro, chill. Just leave some for the rest of us, okay?
I've gotten that a fair bit. When I was a kid, I was told I could do anything, and I misinterpreted that as trying to do everything.
Dude, that is the realest thing I've ever heard. No, for real. Hey, but at least it sounds like you've, like, succeeded in everything.
Yeah.
Though, did you experience burnout?
Yes.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Have you considered resting?
I've definitely gotten, like, way better at that, especially even in the last several years where I've been going through rough patches. I've been, like, way better at, like, managing that as well or just stepping back and recalibrating everything. And I think what's also proven really good to me is that, like, I've had, like, a decent break from, like, drawing for a while. And when I feel like I'm about to reach burnout in a specific discipline, and I'm like, okay, put that down for a little bit, pick up something else that seems to, like... So if the muse doesn't seem to be sitting next to me when I'm writing, and I was like, okay, I'll just... pick up something else. I'll try and draw something and I'll see how rusty I am with that and try and pick that up again. Or, you know, it's sort of just having a little carousel of what you've got going on as opposed to trying to handle it all at once. So
That's actually really good advice. Mm. And I think that, like, segues perfectly into what I was going to next ask you. Obviously, you're studying while you're, you know, publishing this series. And it seems like you've put a lot of work into it. But the thing is, like, you know, becoming an author and writing a book has always been, like, because this is something that I want to do maybe one day, but it's always, like, such a distant concept, right? And I feel like a lot of people think it's, like, almost like unattainable. Like it's like a, you have to be at a certain level before you even start trying, start imagining. And I wanted to ask, like what made you, like, what advice would you give to people who are wanting to take that plunge but are too scared to?
Acknowledge with something, in my particular case, my eyes were too big for my stomach. I just had this really, really massive idea, and I acknowledged that, like, yes, this is going to take a hot minute, but I'm just going to keep going anyway. First of all, just start and just do it, and try not to stare at the peak of the mountain, and just focus on the little steps every day. So try not to get too fussed on.
I love your expressions. Sorry, like yeah. Your words and things like this. So good.
Totally. It's very try not to get too fussed over over the whole entire thing itself, but acknowledging that it's going to be one step at a time. And also asking yourself, has there been progress today? Like not how much, not how little, not how much or little effort you put in, just has there been progress? Because that was sort of me when I started out writing the first draft. It's like, okay, I've never done any massive writing thing like this before. I know that this first draft is going to be awful, and I know that it was, and that will never see the light of day. No one will ever read that.
Maybe your kids.
Yeah, maybe my kids. It's just going out on little baby steps. And it's like, okay, maybe just write like 500 words today, and we'll see how I feel tomorrow. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'll write another 500. And then I reached a point where it's like 500 is a little too easy. Mm-hmm. So why don't I try 1,000 words? Do 1,000 words a day. And this was like around about like a solid year or two after COVID struck. Mm-hmm. So I fortunately had a lot of time on my hands to actually knock out that first draft. Within the year, I had like knocked out that first draft.
That's great.
Yeah. But I guess for anyone else who's also wanting to start out in this, don't be afraid to just dive in and get started on it. But also start small. Just try working on things like poetry or short stories, mm-hmm. because something with a big project like that, with a big novel like mine, it's a very, very big marathon, and it can sometimes be very exhausting because the finish line keeps shifting all the time, and it's just right. like such a big thing to get down pat. It's easy for me to look back on it now as a whole, now that it's started and it's finished, but sometimes it's the fun little short stories and stuff in between that are the little sprints and jumps. And it's like, okay, this is a nice little thing that while I'm putting the big project aside, I can complete this little thing, and then I can have that crack of dopamine from right. finishing all of that little stuff. Because
nice.
Even while I was in the middle of writing that first novel, I also had like a couple of short stories that I did in between all of that, which was while I was expanding the actual world of Astralheim itself. So a lot of those short stories actually sit in that same world.
Oh, sick.
So, yeah.
Right.
So,
okay.
Like, don't be afraid to, like, just start off simple with, like, just doing, like, little short story collections or poetry collection. The actual real challenge is getting it published. That's the actual pain in the rear.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, because you said you self-published instead of going in the traditional route of going to a publishing house or things
yes.
like that. Like, was there a particular reason as to why you went with self-publishing?
The major thing there was it's sort of the self-publishing or indie publishing has become a lot more popular within these last few years. And the first and foremost warning is that it's certainly not cheap. It is a very, very expensive process, which was certainly my main struggle last year, trying to build up the funds to actually get that published, which, by the way, shout out to everybody who did contribute to that campaign. Thank you very, very much. You're the reason that
Yay.
This is even happening. But yeah, it's not a cheap process. But the big advantage with self-publishing is that you have a lot more creative autonomy over the whole process. You call the shots on what the process is, or how the cover may look, or your input is a lot more commonly accepted, whereas when you're with a traditional publisher, they tend to handle more of that. It's less costs on your end, but you have like a little bit less control on how it's picked up and taken on. And usually it's a good route to start off self-published at first, but then start becoming successful in that avenue to where you do catch the eye of a traditional publisher,
mm-hmm.
and then they help pick you up so that you don't have to keep forking out to self-publish your future work, and they'll carry you on from there.
And, like, I suppose as well, at least hopefully at this point, because you have somewhat of, like, a name for yourself, that you wouldn't sort of be pushed over as easily by these big companies.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely like a momentum thing where now that I have it out and I have have developed an audience over time, and I've always been on and off in Slack with keeping track of like social media and everything. It's like a whole other kettle of fish that I don't want to like dive into.
Did you say kettle of fish?
Whole other totally different box of frogs, mate.
Love it.
Yeah, it's just now that you that it's out and that I've got like a very loyal fan base who have been constantly asking when is it out. It's definitely, hopefully it's a matter of momentum to where I'm actually getting better at this whole writing process and it just starts becoming a little bit easier.
Right.
It's just getting past that first hurdle of just getting that first book out was really, really tough. But now it's like we're out the other side of that and, with a
you
bunch
see the
of other
light.
Stuff. Finally see the light. Exactly. Blinded by the light. But yeah.
No, but that's awesome though. What you were saying before, how like your draft will never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to like piggyback onto what you said. And I just want to say to anyone listening, like, hey, the first time you do something, it's probably not going to be pretty.
Yes.
The first time you draw like a self-portrait, the first time you ride a book or the first time you ride a bike, you're going to like fall on your face.
Yes.
But the thing is, what makes us human is that we make mistakes and we improve.
Yes.
Life would be boring if we were perfect at something like straight away. So like, the first step to being successful is to fail.
Yeah.
So just have at it.
You need to embrace the process.
100%. And I can really see the optimism shining through in this episode today, Daniel.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's like wonderful. I actually like wanted to ask as well, with like the kindling, right? So just to clarify, you've already got two books out, or was it just the?
I've already got
the two volumes.
The two volumes of the first book.
So how many in this series?
There's not a defined number.
Oh, wait, I did ask this. I'm sorry.
Yeah. not quite a defined number straight away. It's not like, I mean, it's a very ambitious passion project, of course. It's not Wheel of Time big,
mm-hmm.
but I'd say at least like 8 to 10 books.
Right.
Like a solid 8.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, because there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Is it like where
solid 8 at least?
Like where each book has like a different main character, like it focuses on the different of the 8? Is that like the plan?
Yeah, each of them do get their chance to shine a little bit at a certain point, but there is also like a major like narrative that's sort of like affecting the whole world and affecting all 8 of them. Because this is definitely like at the start of the first book, like there's been an age of like peacetime for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that first book is sort of like with sort of Marcus coming into the limelight, because it's definitely I'm heavily inspired by Norse mythology, and it's
I love
definitely
Norse mythology.
Yeah, the whole series is really framed as like this is Marcus's journey to essentially being like one of the greatest sorcerers his world has like ever known.
Exciting.
So and like
it's an origin story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely like a sort of something at the time of that first book, something is changing in the world, like
they're on the cusp of something.
Yeah, like ancient forces from a long time ago are like old is meeting the modern day, and it's like a lot of like conflicts are arising over time, and it's like myth becomes current affairs again, more or less.
Okay, I see.
Which is, and you definitely see that a little bit in in book two as well, where there's been this fear that things like demons or beings of chaos have been suddenly returning and cropping up, which is scaring everybody because mm-hmm. for a long time everybody thought it was just myth or fairy tale. So that that has sort of been the first indication of something really big is happening here. And when I say, and also when I say demons or beings of chaos, it's not exactly they're not exactly the traditional winged, horned, European demons. It's definitely right. more there are different varieties to them, but to get an overall vibe of what they're like, it's probably closer to Japanese yokai or tentacled,
okay.
Like
Eldritch horrors kind of vibe.
Kind of demons from Princess Mononoke as well, that are very, they're very reactive to negative emotions, like hatred, and it's very, yeah.
I really like that. No, yeah. That's really exciting.
Something big's going on. Yeah.
All right, we're close to wrapping up. Thank you so much for coming onto the show today. This has been a very enlightening conversation. Where can we get these books?
Yes. Right now, the University Bookshop has a beautiful little stand right now where you'll see little piles or towers of the books right now. So you can go over there right now and grab physical paperbacks there. But you can also order paperbacks of both volumes at Real NZ Books from the Copy Press. So you can head onto their website and you'll be able to order paperbacks there. But you can also order ebooks on Amazon as well. And maybe sometime in the future, I might even narrate my own audiobook for both volumes.
Oh my God, that sounds so cool. Yeah. But you're literally living the dream. Oh yeah, I'm just an author, but also I, narrate my own audiobooks, yeah. But also I'm on the stage, I'm an actor. Bro, chill the frick out.
I know. It's such an ironic thing because sometimes I can be quite, I've gotten way better at it now, or better at handling it, of course, but sometimes I can be a little hard on myself or not give myself enough credit. So mm-hmm, sometimes mm-hmm. it's very good to have people with an outside perspective really help me reframe everything and really sort of be appreciative for what I've done, what I've achieved, all that kind of stuff. Because, it's a very coming from a previously chronic overthinker, it's mm-hmm. just it's not a good path to go down, but it's really good sometimes to have a community of friends and family and peers in your life that really help remind you that you're actually goated.
Yeah, no, you actually, okay, that's genuinely, okay, I'll just say something. Ignore the mics. I've never said this to you before, I don't think. I don't remember. I have bad memory. But I remember my first impression of you, and it was at one of those lunchtime theater auditions. Mm. And I think, I don't know who you were auditioning with, but it was with another dude. And I remember you really threw yourself into the audition. And I'm pretty bad at for example, if I heard a song, I'm I can't tell if this is supposed to be good or bad. I don't know what's good and great. Hmm. But I remember seeing you on that stage and I'm this guy's great. He's a great actor. I'm not even just saying this for fun, for real. And then I found out you were in my class. I'm oh my God, there's Daniel. But I was okay, nah, cool. And then Caitlin was yeah, he's pretty cool. Did you know he published his own book? And I'm what?
out of all of the artistic disciplines, acting is definitely the one I've been doing for the longest. So it's it's really nothing that I don't already know. So even doing this Bachelor of Performing Arts, a lot of it I already know fairly well. I'm kind of hitting the ground running. So it's just, jack of all trades, master of all.
Would you like to promote any of your Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, you can check out my Instagram where I regularly post. I'll try and post some drawings as well. You can follow me at dbcromar, which is C-R-O-M-A-R, all lowercase. That's my Instagram. And I've also started up a Patreon as well, where I've just started chucking a couple of exclusive stuff in there as well, exclusive short stories or drawings of maps or everything, because I've got maps of the world and everything as well, or newsletters or anything else I've got going on. I think I've got links to that as well, connected to some of my socials like Instagram or Facebook or even Twitter or X as it's now called. But yeah, that's something that I'm working on as well. And I've also got my own author website, which needs to be updated, which is Daniel Cromer author at squarespace.com. Where you can read more about the characters and the first book and all of that good stuff. So those are the main ones.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming onto the show today, Daniel. It's been an absolute pleasure. And when I get the book, do you think I could get like an autograph?
Absolutely. I've actually been carrying around pens because people have like been asking for that. So
damn, like, bro, you're actually like a legit real life celebrity. Like I hate you so much. No, I love you, I promise. But I hate you so much. Living the dream. You're like the neighbor's kid. Where it's just like, you should be more like the neighbor's kid. Like, he's got like straight A's whatever. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I know what you mean. Yep.
Okay. Okay. I should be serious anyway. Thank you guys so much for coming onto the show. Coming onto the show and listening to What's Up. I know it's been a while since you've last heard from me. It's been a while. But no, I've got some pretty good things coming up. So do keep an ear out for that. As usual, please stay safe. Keep an eye on the news, but don't let it drain you. Free Palestine, Sudan, boycott, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Starbucks. And as usual, I love you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for joining me today on Thoughts and Theories. I hope you've learned something new or taken away something to think about. I hope to see you all next time. Till then, this has been Thoughts and Theories with Asha Amma Asri.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.